You know, the situation for a small party like ours that has a very important message, we have to fight with the difficulties of our limited resources and our efforts to reach out. And each decision of this kind as to whether we run a full slate, what do we do, is complicated. And without individuals like Greg Jan that took the effort to really make it happen so that we have a full slate, we're out there doing the best we can to get our message out. I want to mention that when Monday, when we go on this Martin Luther King event, I'd like to know if there's people here from Los Angeles that will join with us. We do want to have a few volunteers with us handing out campaign literature as we march, because I'll assure you that we will be the only governor and lieutenant governor candidate on that march. And I can assure you, that I will be the only candidate for governor who actually marched with Martin Luther King. I always wonder what they were doing. You know, at a time in which the African-American people, in violation of the 15th Amendment of the Constitution, did not have the right to vote, in which these two same parties were there preventing them from the right to vote, and those two parties have never apologized to the African-American people for having violated the Constitution, even though every single elected official raised their hand and said they were there to enforce the Constitution. Which is one of the issues that separates the Green Party from the Democrats and Republicans, in the concept that a society, all societies, can't function without the rule of law. You have to have law-abiding citizens. And part of the problem that we face is the breakdown, the corruption and the hypocrisy that goes on in our society. You know, when I campaigned in 76, I used to give the same speech over and over again. You know, I mean, what do? You change it a little bit, but you basically, you know, you crack the same jokes. And one of the things that struck me was that I had these, you know, staff that came with me. We'd travel around and we'd be out there giving. And I started noticing that they would laugh at the same jokes over and over and over again. So I want to prepare you, as many of you have already heard me speak, that you're going to be hearing the same jokes over and over again. I know that not everybody here has heard them, but I know after a while it'll wear out, and I'll have to try to remember where I've spoken. But you know, I tell you, we're making headway. I mean, you know, I start my talk when I go out to the different counties by saying that, you know, I mean, and this is not Greg Jan I'm talking about, that we have a campaign worker that's really doing one hell of a job to recruit people for the Green Party, more than anybody has ever done before, in my opinion. And it's not Medea Benjamin. It's not Dan Hamburg. It's not Sarah Meir. It's Governor Gray Davis. I mean, it would be hard to invent a person that could so effectively alienate every group that they're depending on to win the election. And it is a commentary about the depth of the problems of this society and the contradictions that most of those groups will endorse him and vote for him, even though they're totally upset with him and have make no secret of telling me. I have all kinds of, because of the world I wander around in, I meet all kinds of people. And it is amazing the comments they say to me. You know, like... Art Pulaski's a wonderful guy. You know, Art Pulaski's pretty smart, the head of the AFL-CIO. And I heard him speak. We invited my firm, had a conference where he was one of the speakers. And he said a lot of very good things. Well, he just rushed to endorse Gray Davis. You know, I don't have his phone tapped. But I sure would like to hear what he really thinks. And I tell you, I wouldn't be surprised. I think this is true across the board. I mean, I talked to Antonio Gonzalez, you know, and we're friends, and we talk, and he meets all these people, and he talks to all the Latino leaderships. He tells me the one thing you don't have to worry about is support for Gray Davis. They may vote for him. They're not for him. This is really amazing. Amazing phenomena. And I think our campaign already made a very interesting success when I pinned the name on him, Play to Pay. Pay to Play. Did I say backwards? Pay to Play. The pay-to-play governor. It's an interesting thing because you know what? The public all knows it's true. They know people don't donate money to the Democratic and Republican Party. They make investments. That's why, I mean, when you have a corporation that gives exactly the same amount to both candidates, who are they supporting? I mean, what they're buying something. And it's a cost of business. You know? So, and Gray Davis knows it. And you know, I think it's a success of the strength of the Green Party that when we announced the campaign, the Bay Guardian, you know, Tim Redmond, the editor of the Bay Guardian, who always endorses Greens, he gave them a call. And they said, we don't care what Greens think. He said, you know, what do you think about Mr. Camejo's thing that we need runoff elections? And they said, we don't care what they think. You know, it's irrelevant. They're the people who elected Bush, you know, this type of stuff. When I did the interview for the Sentinel in Santa Cruz, I deduced from the appearance of the reporter that he was green or should be green. Well, he called the Democrats. You know, he's a good reporter, so I made a lot of nasty comments about Gray Davis, so he called them too. And they answered every point by point. They've completely changed their policy now. They're scared. And I'll tell you, everybody knows it, that when people go to vote, especially with a Latino name, that there's going to be a certain percentage of Latinos who, just for the hell of it, are going to vote for the Latino. Because one of the great problems that the lesser evil voters have this year is working it out. This is a tough year for them. You sit there and go, okay, now which one is the lesser? And you say, okay. You see, Gray Davis has been in office for 4 years. It's like the ADA people that Faramarz took me to meet with them. He's doing a great job there. And I met with them, and they say they're so upset. They're so upset. They endorse him. They voted for him. See, they're real upset. Well, all the people who vote for Reardon because they're real upset with Gray Davis 4 years from now will be telling us, why did I do that? Don't think that Reardon is going to be some big progressive step forward from what Gray Davis did. Though I'll tell you, it is hard. You know, one of the jokes I'm using in the campaign, I'm going to show you this so you all know. If I haven't done it in your county, when you have me come and speak, I'll do this. Look, I want to show you this. Look at this chart. This is the price of natural gas. Okay? Now, our governor bought $43 billion of energy right here. Okay? I want to tell you something. Let me tell you something. That's not easy. I mean, that takes an effort. The Guinness Book of World Records is going to go to Gray Davis for the worst trade ever in the history of the world. That is not, I'm not saying that to make a joke. That happens to be the truth. No one else has made a trade in the history of the world that in 6 months lost $32 billion. That $43 billion now is worth $11 billion. Okay? No one has ever done that. Not only that, no one has ever bought natural gas after it goes 3 standard deviations off its trend line without hedging it. No one. No one has ever done that. Except Governor Davis with our money. If the public, if they would ever let me into the debates. You know what happened when I hold this chart up and show that? I mean, if he was head of a corporation, the board would have fired him even if they're all crooks. This is such a level of incompetency. It's unbelievable. Let me show you another chart that I love. This was Jim Smith sent me this. Okay, here's the use of energy in California, of electricity, okay? These are the peaks. You see that? There's peaks. Okay, this is like months, you know? These little dots down here are months. So there's peaks. You know where we had the blackouts? Right down here. How do you do that? How can you provide enough electricity here without a blackout, but over here you have a blackout? Okay, the Greens, we understand what this is. We understand what it is. And it is interesting if we can reach out and really talk to people, if we can get so that our voice is heard. Now, I had a chance to be on TV here in L.A. It's really the first time I'm on TV, and it's going to be shown several times. And the person who ran the program, he said to me, after March 5th, you'll have me back for half an hour alone on these issues. Now, That program goes to, you know, he told me what, well, I forget what the figure was, 600,000, 1 million people. And I held up these little charts, you know. And I watched the face of the, they had this little panel of Democrats and Republicans who are all, you know, attack dogs trained by this guy so that they can have an exciting program. And I watched their faces, you know, and they were, you could see the pain. You know, how do you argue against this level of incompetency? Now, we have answers to it. And by the way, I guess maybe I shouldn't. I want to say something to you, but I'm trying to think whether I should say it or not say it. All right. Well, I had a little talk with, this is, you know, Bill. Is Mike here? He knows the name. Yeah. I had a little talk to him about a proposal that I'm going to be making about 2 months from now, which you're all going to be very happy to hear about solar energy. And when I told it to him, he said, I'll have you on this program to explain it, to promote it. Because it took, you know, it's taken me about a year, but I figured out a way to get solar on people's houses that is immediately cash positive, and they put down no payment, they make no payment, they get solar for free, and it's immediately cash positive. And so what we're going to do, in the next 2 to 3 weeks, I hope to have all the contracts signed that we need to launch this. And then we got to use it as a political weapon, and I'm going to call it the green gift to California. Because the Green Party, part of what we want to do is not only be criticizing, but trying to find solutions that work today at every level. And that, you know, when they asked me on that TV program, well, what do you do this for? You can't win. The way I answered it, what are you talking about? We're winning all the time. I mentioned Matt Gonzalez in San Francisco, who got, what Matt, is Matt here? Matt got something like 60 or 65% of the vote. Rebecca Kaplan got 43% in Oakland. I said, right here, we're in the city of Santa Monica. We got the mayor, and then they called the second one a mayor, too. I don't know how they do that. He's a pro, and he's a temp. I guess he's a temporary pro, being the mayor or something. But okay, so we got the two mayors. And I looked at the Republicans and I said, you see, you're just watching TV. You don't realize that we're everywhere and we're growing and we're winning all over the place. And that's why you make a stupid comment like that, we can't win when we're already winning. You know, this is important that we give people that image of ourselves. And, you know, I want to tell you something else. I do believe very strongly that it's sort of like when a wind hits a tree, the leaves move first. You know, there's a certain sensitivity. When the anti-war movement began, the first people that moved were students, and they were primarily middle-class students, and they were primarily white students. But I'll tell you something, every poll that was taken, more African-Americans and more Latinos were against the war than in the European-American population, but it was the European-American youth that moved first. That is because of a lot of reasons, a lot of things having to do with economics. It is understandable on the issue of the environment that you have a similar parallel. And I think the points that Donna made here are very important. The issue of comfort zones, I had never thought of it quite the way she said it. And that is actually quite brilliant. Because what will tend to happen is until African-American leaders are part of the Green Party and move in their own community and we can really run candidates. I mean, Donna's just a vanguard in this. Among Latinos, it's a little easier. I looked over the list in Contra Costa when we made a mailing and I noticed that a very large number of Latinos are registered Green. Now, that doesn't mean they show up for the meetings, that they become the activists yet. That is a process, but it is starting to happen, and it will happen. And I just want to assure all European Americans here, it is not your fault that the Latinos and African American community are not with us. I never want to blame people who try to do the right thing and fight for it, for problems that we have in order to organize a progressive movement and that's divided. And this is very important that you understand that. That doesn't mean there aren't things we can't do. That doesn't mean that the type of things that Donna is proposing aren't wise and bright for us to do. But understand that. There is no conflict here. This party is a party of our species and of all people in our species. And that's what we are. We're not even of any country or any region, because the stupidity and the madness that now exists in the world, which is condemning our own species to its self-destruction, which is what they're doing to us. It's like those who want to argue about the economy and the environment like they're separate things. They're one and the same thing. Every ecological system in the world is in decline. What do you call it again, where things that grow in the ocean?
Coral reef.
Every coral reef is dying. System is dying in the world. The acid rain, it takes 20, 30 years to break through to the bottom and then pollute the water with the heavy metals. That's happening all over. The ozone hole sits there, and unless we do things, we'll continue to grow. I mean, you know, the rabbits are going blind in the south of Chile. We've got 4% of our ancient forests left in this state. That means we've destroyed 96% of it. The amount of inches of topsoil that we used to have is now about a third of when the Europeans, Americans arrived in this nation. We're destroying the gene base of the entire planet. You cannot, just because it's the most profitable form of corn, just make the same type of corn. You destroy the gene base and therefore the future of that species. We continue to do this stuff, and it's so destructive. And this is not some secondary issue. It isn't like hugging trees or we're just the environmentalists. This is a survival issue for the species. This is a survival issue for our economy. This is a survival issue for everybody. And it's only the Green Party that understands it and is promoting it and fighting for it. You know, Bush got up and said, we're going to have the fuel cell. So it's okay to pollute now.
Yeah.
That, you know, the cynicism of that type of comment. But it is a contradictory comment, by the way, because now he put it in the heads of people that we have to have fuel cells. That's positive. But I want to say one other thing about this corruption and destruction, and I want to try to be brief here. This Enron thing. This is big news. This is really, really big news. Enron was the seventh largest corporation in the United States. But what happened there was that the stealing got out of control. You see, controlled stealing is like General Electric. They steal like mad. And I want to explain this, what I mean by this. I don't know if everybody gets, I think most people don't yet get what I'm trying to say here about the stealing. You know, let me explain this. There is a peculiar thing that is happening in the United States that is not yet absorbed by us and everybody, and I'm almost like scared. I mean, I'm about to publish this book, which we'll talk about this, but it'll be probably out. It takes so long to get the book's all written and ready to go, but it takes so long. Probably be out in June. The ownership of the public sector of the largest 1,000 corporations has shifted in the last 30 years. It's rather an amazing thing that working people through the pension funds and mutual funds, and let me give you the figures so you understand it. $10 trillion in the pension funds, $5 trillion of them are in equities. The total equity market is about $12 trillion. Okay? So $6 trillion would be 50%. With the mutual funds, it goes over. It's actually estimated by, in a book called Fiduciary Capitalism, they estimated at 60% is now owned. This is totally new. Because what it means is when they Enron people steal, the management, the top management, they're not just stealing from their own employees. They're stealing from the owners. They're out of control. They're totally out of control. Even under the most hardcore pro-capitalist point of view, they're out of control. Now, that's interesting because that sets certain people, certain things in motion, which is very different. The introduction to my book is written by a Republican who's run twice for the Senate. His name is Robert Monks. He was appointed by Ronald Reagan to head up in the Labor Department all the pensions of the United States. And he completely agrees what I'm saying in the book. Because when he went to run those pension funds, he discovered how the corporate world is violating the law, totally disrespecting the nation as he sees it, and the stakeholders. And the stakeholder and the shareholder, you understand what the word stakeholder means? It's like the people who work for the company. They're not the owners, they're not the shareholders, they're the stakeholders. They're involved, they're affected by it. So when Enron, look, let me give you an idea. Nader pointed this out, but let me give you the latest figures. Nader says, in 1940, the CEOs made 14 times what an average worker makes. In 1990, they made 85 times what an average worker makes. And today, the figure is 531-1. And it's about three times what the ratio is in Europe. Okay. But it's not just the CEO. The boards are involved. And Enron's board, they paid the board members $380,000 a year, which means they have four meetings a year, about $90,000 to attend a one-day meeting. And they got shares in the company. Their estimates now is they took out $1.1 billion in a company. The problem with Enron was that it wasn't profitable. They did it by such criminal activities to such an extent that it all fell apart on them. The whole system is starting to break down. And don't think this doesn't worry the people who control the society. You see, it's not just us that is worrying about it. They're starting to worry about it. Labor looks on this and can't figure out what in the world is going on here. You see, part of the problem here, and it, for us, I think it's a giant opportunity. There's got to be a battle now. There's got to be. The union movement will recognize it. Now, that, you know, we hired, and where I sit as a trustee in Contra Costa County, we were the first county public pension fund in California to hire a labor lawyer. And I can tell you, you have no idea the way that battle roared to get that, you know, on our board. Oh, my God, that was something. I didn't think I could pull it, you know. Bill Sokol's a great labor lawyer. He's, wonderful, wonderful attorney. So I proposed him, and we had this battle, and I had to get the five votes. And I won't tell you the whole story because it'd take too long, but it was amazing. I mean, actually, at first we lost 5-4, and then this about 75-year-old retiree worker, the vote was lost. And we were about, what you do is when you lose the vote, then you have another motion is made. And I was sort of emotional. I got a little emotional, and I gave this little speech about they were going to make Morrison Foerster. It's like the Anderson, you know, one of these criminal companies. They were going to make them our attorneys, and I made the point that they destroyed the union. They destroyed the pension fund of the union workers of Pacific Lumber, Maxim. They're probably the most hated corporation in the state of California because they're the clear-cutting our redwoods. And I said, I just will not raise my hand for that corporation to be our lawyers. And she raised her hand and she said, you know what? I changed my mind. I'm not going to vote for them. I'm going to vote for Bill Sokol. And so now he's our attorney. Bill Sokol told me that went all the way to the top of the AFL-CIO, that they were talking about. How did this happen? The labor movement is starting to rethink this whole issue, and they want to start organizing. We've got to start thinking that we don't just run for city councils and we don't just run for, we also run to become trustees of these pension funds. You know that the supervisors vote and put four on every one of these counties. And there's nothing wrong for us to find, but they have to be people that know about certain things and so forth. This is part of the area that we've got to fight. And when I went on that board, I had no idea, and I found myself immediately in a majority, because all the elected labor people immediately rallied around me to make it a pro-environmental and pro-social fund. By the way, we are also financially the best performing pension fund in the state of California. So let me just say a couple more things and I'll end it. You know, what is happening in our state is there's a polarization happening. There's the figures were given today in one of the wonderful workshops. By the way, we had such fabulous workshops here. All that workshop on that that we had on three strikes. I mean, that was so, oh man, well, I wish that was videos, because I'd like to rehear those figures that were given there. That was really amazing. And you know, when we do these plenaries, it's good that we do those, and we should try to do them like on a campus or somewhere where we can leaflet and get local people to come. They were fantastic. And also the one that was done by Kevin from Santa Monica on the living wage, the people he brought there, that was really, I really enjoyed attending them. It really helped me to be a better candidate by getting that information. But this polarization is taking place. More 7 out of 10 of the new jobs that are being created are these like minimum wage jobs. So our society is polarizing. And that is sort of what Antonio Gonzalez was trying to say, that the Latinos are voting now and they just automatically vote for the Democrats, but the Democrats don't do anything for them. So a vacuum is being created. And the way history always moves is that things are very, very slow for a long time and it's very frustrating, so, and then all of a sudden it explodes. You know, and for those of us who lived through the 60s, we saw it. The old people saw it. We saw it. The population explode. We saw this massive upturn. I remember going around. I was going around talking against the war in Vietnam, you know, and there'd be 20 people would show up. And then suddenly it was 200, and then it was 2,000, and then we were the majority. It was an amazing thing how fast it can suddenly happen. So, you know, you don't know when it's going to happen, but we're positioning ourselves. The Greens have to position. You have to be ready for when that turn comes, because this is the only organization, political organization in the United States, that is positioning itself and really understands these issues. And the Green Party is growing all over the United States. And forget about bad things you hear about Green parties in other countries. That's not our problem exactly. I mean, it is our problem, but you know what I mean. Don't feel guilty. It's got nothing to do with us. Some jerk in Germany wants to support war and send soldiers around. The last thing we want is to have Germany rearming. It's a huge victory that Germany doesn't have an army and that Japan doesn't, and we ought to keep it that way. This idea that it's a Green that proposes, you know, it's like, Jesus, it's like in Texas, when they wanted to pass something against the Latinos, they bring out an African American to make the motion, so they could divide the oppressed community and get what they wanted against Latinos. And there's the Germans praying a Green to come out with the remilitarization, and for the once again Germany sending troops into the third world. Well, anyway, I don't want to get too excited. Okay. Huh?
Don't be around the
glass. So there are many very important issues we're going to raise here. We're the only party that's standing up against the death penalty. You know, all right. The polls show the majority are for the death penalty, but there's 30-40% of the people in the state who are against it. We're their party, and they'll slowly know that. You know, affordable housing. I mean, there is no more affordable housing. They won't build it. People are just, it's horrendous what's happening. And you know the way the laws are. If you own your own house, it's tax deductible. If you don't, you're paying rent because you're the poorest, it's the highest percentage, then you don't get the tax deductible. Think how totally under that, you know. So these are racial profiling. On the Latino issue, you know, I'm going to get up on those Latino, I'll get on those radio stations and we'll get some TV, and I'll get on there. I'll get interviews with them, you know. And I'll talk about the issue of decriminalization, you know, decriminalization of people. And to me, you know, I've talked to Antonio about, you know, how people understand it and so forth. You know, I'm real proud of the fact I'm partially indigenous. My great-great-grandfather, my birth name is Pedro Miguel Camejo Guanche, and the Miguel is named after Miguel Anzola, who was he fought with Simón Bolívar. He was the first governor of the state of Lara, where my family comes from. And so I was named after, now he was indigenous. He was a native person. And most of you don't know this, but my name, Pedro Camejo, I'm named after an African. He led the slaves in the fight for liberation with Simón Bolívar. He died in Simón Bolívar's arms, and he made him a general as he was dying. He was the first black general in the history of Venezuela. And his name was Pedro Camelo, and I was named after him. That's why they called me Pedro. So I was, you see, I was born to do this. In fact, I'll tell you a funny story. When I announced for president, of course, nobody here cared. You know, the media wouldn't cover it. It was front page news in Venezuela because of the name. And then poets wrote poems about me. And all kinds of stuff happened. And they made posters and they plastered the town where my family originally comes from. They plastered the whole town. I swear to God, I could have won the election there. You know? And you know, it is interesting that I actually did carry a county in the United States. It was where the La Raza Unida Party had taken power in South Texas. There were five counties. And you know, and I want to tell you something. One of those counties, Crystal City, the Democrats, it took them 5 years to break them. And they actually lived for something like, I don't know the exact amount of time, but like for 2 years without electricity. Talk about blackout. They had a permanent blackout. They cut the electricity on the entire city, and the people there just stood their ground and lived without electricity for 2 years, but they wouldn't vote Democrat until they finally crushed them, and they finally got the Democrats back in power, and they turned on the electricity. That's a terrific and unbelievable story of another time, but the point is that there was interest then, and there is still interest in the Latino community, and there will be. And it's going to take time, but this campaign will be just one more step along the way. And this campaign will be run, and as we are running it, to help build the party as a whole. We're not interested in great stars or trying to get a lot of votes. The key is for those local candidates to win. It's to strengthen our local efforts. To make Joe Chamberlain win for the state legislature, we got to break through. To find a place to help Medea Benjamin, when she makes her next move win. It's to help Rebecca Kaplan, who got 43% of the vote last time and is now working real hard with Wilson Riles Jr., who would be such a victory for us if Riles won. But even if he doesn't, it's laying the groundwork for Rebecca to win next time. And what our campaign is all about is strengthening the Green Party, helping to build up its finance and its structure so that we can continue to move forward and really become an alternative to the Democrats and Republicans. Thank you. And I have a surprise.